This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Help me welcome to the studio Jack Marshall. He is president of ASAP, Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population. The report is out. You paid for it, and we're going to find out exactly what's in it from ASAP's perspective, which conducted this report. Jack, how are you? Welcome
Hello.
Back.
Good to be here, Coy. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm glad you had an opportunity to come back in on short notice. Thanks for being here. So remind us what ASAP is first before we talk about the report and all of the issues that this report represents. What is ASAP?
ASAP is an 8-year-old local nonprofit organization that argues that there are significant costs of continued growth, cost to the environment, to the quality of life, to the character of the community, to our taxes, and that a smart community doesn't just accommodate growth and put it in the right places, but it goes beyond that and says, we should identify an optimal, sustainable population size. And what ASAP is trying to do is encourage the discussion about that issue. And the research that we are now embarked on is an effort to provide some data to this discussion. Most of the discussion, as you know, has been kind of a meandering exchange of ill-informed opinions. And we're trying to go beyond that.
A meandering exchange of ill-informed opinions. Man, can I use that?
Well, I have to tell the truth.
Jacques, I like that.
Jacques Barzun said it about graduate student seminars. And I stole it from him, but it is a nice phrase, isn't it?
Well, it's often what public discourse passes for these days. People know just enough to sound really stupid. But anyway, I applaud anybody for stepping up, and because once you join the conversation, you certainly can learn more. So ASAP is the, you know, is... For folks who don't know much about it, they think, oh, ASAP, that's the stop growth group.
Well, we argue that growth is good, up to a point, and that in every community, a smart community should decide if it wants to continue growing forever or whether it wants at some point to stop of its own volition. We think that every community is going to stop growing for one of three reasons. It's going to stop because it runs out of an essential resource like water or land, or it stops because it's so ugly nobody wants to move there anymore, like inner cities and some suburbs, or because the community has enough sense to look down the pike and say, gee, let's stop short of that and let's decide what size is optimal for us now. And it may change. In 10 years, they may adjust that number. And then it works to level off at that point.
Yeah. Now, is anybody doing this anywhere in the country? I mean, can we point to other communities that have done this kind of thing?
As far as we know, Coy, we are the first organization in the country at a local level to argue that a community, a smart community, should aim at a sustainable size. There are thousands of smart growth organizations.
Yeah, that was my next question. Is this smart growth?
Yeah, no.
Because we've heard that.
Well, we think smart growth is necessary but not sufficient. The smart growth movement started about 20 years ago, and it was revolutionary. Rather, people recognized the costs of growth, the environmental costs, the social costs, the fiscal costs, and said, well, let's see if we can minimize those costs by putting the growth that's going to occur into the right places. Let's have growth areas, let's cluster growth, let's so forth.
All that kind of stuff we hear out of Albemarle County.
Exactly. And Albemarle County was a leader in that. It was
master plans.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's done a really good job of implementing smart growth tactics. ASAP says that's necessary. That's good. We're glad and we support those. But in essence, it's nothing but an accommodation to growth. And over the long haul, smart growth gets us to the same place that dumb growth gets us. That is, once our growth area is filled up, then it starts spilling over into rural areas. And the environmental, the fiscal, the social costs occur. So we say, let's start now.
Especially when you factor in all the waivers that get granted to developers, right. even with the smart growth.
Exactly.
I mean, they still give them, or you have instances like Pantops where you don't get a master plan. You wait and you slowly do a master plan,
exactly.
Which is the truth be told, and let the developers have at it, and then you do a master plan.
So what we see is the death of a thousand cuts, and it keeps going. And so ASAP says, look, let's go beyond that. And it turns out, when we first started, we wrote to communities all over the country and said, hey, how did you guys identify the optimal size for you, the sustainable size? And everybody wrote back or emailed or called and said, what? Gee, we haven't done that. We're just growing because of either accident or the wishes of a handful in our community that profit from growth. But if you guys in Charlottesville can figure out how to do it, yeah. Tell us. And so to our...
Talk about that a little bit, Jack, because that truly is about the engine for growth. Because you said the small minority of people who profit from growth, whether you're developers in the real estate business or construction business, it is a big part of the economy. But in relative numbers of people, it is a small number of people who actually profit from growth and want growth.
Yeah.
That's how they make their money.
Yeah. And it's the power elite in virtually every American community. And when you look at the Chamber of Commerce, for example, it's not your housewives and tree huggers like me. It's the folks who are in business and want to maintain and extend their market and want to see the population grow. And it's interesting. It isn't just the developers that we tend to demonize. Let me say first, in terms of demonizing, that most of the folks who are urging growth are doing what they should be doing to make a profit. That's their business. It isn't that they're bad guys. But the engine of growth in any community consists not just of the developers and the builders, but the banks that provide the loans for houses, the companies that provide the cement and the wood and the so forth to build them, the folks that provide the furniture and the wallpaper and the drapes. There's a huge infrastructure that wants to see growth in a community. And our argument is that as a result of the power of their voices on an elected body, as supervisors or so forth, we see the triumph of short-term good for a few over the long-term good of the whole community.
We're talking with Jack Marshall. He's president of ASAP, Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population. And, of course, the phone lines are always open for you at 977-1070. Mm-hmm. And Greg is on line one. Greg, thank you for the call. You're on with Jack Marshall. You go right ahead.
Hey, I didn't get it all, but here's my thing on this. I'm not wealthy, and I'm not a real estate guy. I'm just a stonemason. I don't have hardly any money or anything. I got a little two-bedroom house, but as far as I'm concerned, this is America. And in America, we're free to do what we want to do, and that's grow or not grow. And I don't understand why people think the government can impede our freedom on the state and local level. It's my business what I do with my land. And it's not the government's. And I hate growth, too, but as far as I'm concerned, it's a right for everybody to do what they want to with their property. And if that includes growth, so be it.
That's a great point. Greg, thank you for the call. What do you say to that? Because there's a lot of people that feel very strongly that way, whether, this is my land, I should be able to sell it in a marketplace for however much I can get to it. And if I can get the most by selling it to a guy who wants to put a bunch of homes on it, then I ought to be able to do that.
Sure. And I'm sympathetic with that argument. But for somebody like Greg, who argues he doesn't like regulation, he doesn't like to be told what to do by government, I hope he's driving most of the time on the right side of the road. Because the sacrifice of his right to drive on the left protects us all. And that's what regulations should be. There are limits, whether they're to protect our drugs or our food or a whole raft of things, that keep us as a society going. Now, the question before us in terms of this growth thing is, do we need more regulation? And the knee-jerk reaction is, of course not. There's already too much. But the question is, what are the costs of continuing growth? And we have to constantly ask, when you hear ASAP's argument about we should at some point, and we don't know what that point is, we should stop growing. The question is, well, what are the costs of not stopping growing? And to somebody like Greg, I would say, well, in the short term, Greg, you're right. I mean, nobody has the right to come in and take your land unless it can be shown down the pike that there are real costs to the whole community if we don't. And that's just what happened in 1980 when the county decided that it had to downzone to protect the South Fork Rivanna Reservoir. It said, unless we reduce the development potential in the watershed around this reservoir, it's going to fill up with silt, and it's going to be unsustainable for our community. And so we got to take some pretty serious action. And had we not, then the problems of providing enough water would have surfaced long ago.
Yeah. We got a lot more mileage, more life out of the reservoir, you mean, by down...
Sure.
By not letting all the development in the western part of the county.
Exactly. And that's what this research that we're now, ASAP is now embarked on, is asking, is are there long-term costs of growth that suggest to our community that we should revisit the pace of growth?
Now, you've got a real challenge because you're asking Americans to think long-term, and that we're not good at that.
In fact, we're probably hardwired not to do it. There's a cognitive psychologist at UVA, John Haidt, who with other colleagues, has pointed out that in terms of evolutionary development, we're ready to deal with immediate threats, with the saber-toothed tiger behind us, the guy with the club. But when you talk about long-term threats, way down the line, for example, global climate change, geez, we can't deal with that.
Yeah.
And moreover, Americans are lousy at deferring gratification. And we want to just grab now. And what we're arguing is, gee, we're going to have to make some sacrifices if we really give a damn about our children's children.
Yeah. We're talking with Jack Marshall. He is president of ASAP. It's Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population. The phone lines are open at 977-1070. Mimi, waiting patiently on line one. Hey, Mimi, welcome to the program. You're on with Jack. Go right ahead.
Hello. I'd just like to say that I think Jack is totally misleading people by telling them that his organization is trying to control growth. I think they're looking for negative growth in conjunction with one or two of the county supervisors. And as far as telling people what they can do with their land, you know, somehow that just smacks of socialism, communism. And I'd like to know which of Obama's czars he works for.
All right. Mimi, thank you for the call. Did you work for an Obama czar?
I think I heard Mimi at one of these healthcare reform meetings. I'm not sure.
Yeah. But did you work for the Obama administration?
No, I didn't. Okay. I worked for the World Health Organization, which is probably, I'm sure she thinks, also a godless communist organization. We don't have a sense of what the optimal sustainable size in the county is. That's one of the reasons we're doing this research. And I think there probably are some on our board that would already think we've got too many folks and that should be negative. But there are a lot of us who think, no, we can continue to grow. And in fact, this research...
And what is this research? When you say the report, fill us in. We should have gotten here quicker. But give us the background of the report and then tell us what it is.
A couple years ago, we decided that we wanted to provide some facts to add, to enrich the discussion about growth in the community, not just have people screaming at one another. And so we started what we're calling the Optimal Sustainable Population Size Project. It has two phases. The first phase looks at the carrying capacity, the biological carrying capacity of the community. And we funded five studies, in part with money from the city and the county, but also a big foundation grant and $26,000 from ASAP members and friends. And there are five studies in there I'll tell you about in a minute. The second phase that will begin when we've presented reports to the county and city authorities will look at socioeconomic issues involved in population size. For example, the economic costs of growth, the changes in the character of a community as it increases in size and so forth. And all these studies are like blind men trying to describe an elephant. And the elephant, of course, is this optimal size. Each study will give us a slightly different perspective on how to grab the idea of a sustainable community.
Yeah. Jack Marshall is with ASAP, and this report, this this first report, was publicly financed, right? So explain that background.
Well, it was partly publicly financed.
So not 100%.
No, we got a total of $112,000 for it, of which 36 came from public sources, 25 from Albemarle County, and 11 prorated by population size from Charlottesville. And we're delighted and proud of the communities for doing that, and in fact they're getting national attention for having the guts to use money to help understand planning of the future, looking at the vision. It's a visionary kind of thing for them to do.
Now, Jack, what's your response to people who are very upset that public money went into this study? And what is the rationale for publicly financing it? What does it add? What information does this give to the local governing bodies that is advantageous for planning?
Well, we think that an essential tool for planning is your goal. And in the absence of, we have a goal for schools, we have a goal for water, we have a goal for all sorts of things, but not for population size. American communities tend to kind of shrug and accommodate to whatever growth occurs, either by accident or, as I said, by the wishes of the powerful few who profit. And the county and the city recognize that, and they recognize that they should know more about the impacts of growth and think more about an optimal, sustainable size. Sustainability is a... It's not just a buzzword. It's a real legitimate concept for both the city and the county authorities. And it is meeting the needs of the present generation without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. And the city and the county recognize that if you take that seriously, you've got to know more about where we're going demographically. And we went to the city and the county, mostly the county, for years and said, do this research. And they said, look, we don't have the money, we don't have the time, we don't have the skills. So finally we said, okay, well, we'll try to find people to do it, but give us a little bit of money to leverage. Then we'll go out and we'll get the rest. And that's just what they did. And with their initial gutsy gift, we then got the rest of the money, and we're now... holding up the report
there in your hands. Let's talk about what's in that report when we get back after a break for local news and weather. We'll continue this conversation on the other side with more of your calls at 977-1070. We are talking with Jack Marshall of ASAP. This is Charlottesville right now. We got 37 minutes after 5 p.m. here on this beautiful little Friday. It's 87 degrees. Looks like we're headed for some more rain over the next few days as another hurricane makes its way up the coast. I hope you're having a good day. Thanks for joining me. We're talking with Jack Marshall. He is president of ASAP, Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population. The phone lines are always open for you at 977-1070. So, Jack, this study, partly publicly financed, comes out. What does it say?
Well, the name of it is Estimating Impacts of Population Growth on Ecosystem Services for the Charlottesville Area.
So what happens to the environment the more people we put in it?
Well, it's premised on two kind of assumptions. One is that as from an environmental perspective, two things happen with growth. One is that there's less of the good stuff, that is forests and fields and open fields, stream buffers, and more the bad stuff, pavement and other impervious surface and fragmentation in natural areas. The second assumption is that the natural environment isn't just a community's pretty face. It turns out that fields and forests and streams and animals, whether big or little, all the living organisms functioning together as a unit in any environment comprise an ecological system, an ecosystem that provides benefits of incredible value to humans. And it's free, and we tend to take it for granted. Ecosystem services range from erosion and flood control to crop pollination and air purifications. And all of these are essential for the community. And what this study does is say, well, what happens to those essential ecosystem services as the population expands?
Give me an example.
Well, one of the findings is that if the population expands by 50%. It's now 135,000, 40,000 in the
city. So if we go up to around 200,000.
Yeah. It's a little less than that. That in our growth areas, in Crozet and Route 29 and so forth, that we really lose the trees and the fields and the ecosystem services, the sequestration of carbon, the ability to protect what the toxins that go into the streams and so forth. And as we go on up to, say, 200%, 125%, if we go up to the maximum build-out,
it's about 400,000 people.
That's the calculation in this, and it turns out that that's pretty close to the calculation that the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission did several years ago. But at that point, this study suggests that the Albemarle-Charlottesville area would lose about 45% of its agricultural open space and about 37% of its forests. And in that situation, the ability of the local environment to do the important stuff, to sequester and store carbon, to clean air and water, would be drastically reduced. And our question, I mean, the question that I think our community has to ask is, yeah, assuming it accepts these results, is that okay? Do we care? Yeah. Or do we want to...
We're talking about Jack Marshall of ASAP. Is the main question you have for people in Central Virginia, do you want to look like Fairfax County?
Well, it's not a matter of looking like it. There are... As I say, there are all sorts of impacts of growth. One is environmental. Another is quality of life and character of a community. And do you want to look like Fairfax or Loudoun is the quality of life thing.
Yeah.
And we're asking it's a deeper question, I think, but equally important, and the one that isn't as obvious. It's what happens to those things we take for granted, those environmental services that most of us don't even know. I didn't know about.
So it's not just do you want to look like Fairfax County. It's and how many people are going to live in Central Virginia before we reach a point of diminishing returns on growth when we've lost a certain percentage of our forest. We've lost a certain percentage of the open land. The water is, you know, damaged to a certain extent that we can't fix it anymore.
Yes.
These kind of questions.
Yes. And that's what this research asks.
Yeah.
And it's a subtle question, but the answer is tremendously important.
We're talking with Jack Marshall of ASAP. Margot is waiting patiently on line one. Margot, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. You're on with Jack.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very good. Happy Little Friday.
I have two questions for you.
Go right ahead.
underground water, can you overbuild to the point where you don't have any more underground water? And does that also affect the water going into the reservoir? And the second question is, whatever happened to clustered housing?
Two great questions. Margot, thank you very much.
Margot, ask me the underground question in a month. One of the five studies we're doing in this first phase, in addition to this one about ecosystem services, is a look at what is the effect of groundwater, what is the effect on groundwater of population growth. And Nick Evans and Mike Collins are doing that study for us, and I think it's going to be very interesting.
What does history tell us about that?
Well, I learned that the water we get from wells doesn't go down into an aquifer like it does in most American communities. We don't have an aquifer under here. We have fractured rocks. And if you sink a well on your land, and I sink one 20 feet away, you may have lots of water, but I won't have a drop, just hypothetically, because you hit a fracture and I didn't. And so it's much
more... We're not tapping into an underground lake or anything.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it isn't like some of the southwestern communities where we're draining the aquifer. The aquifer sinks lower. It's quite possible that Nick Evans and Mike Collins will find that growth doesn't have the effect on groundwater in Albemarle County that it does, for example, in Arizona.
Interesting. Yeah.
But we don't know yet. So Margot, that's I think an answer to your first question. The second about clustering, it's still on the books. It's what I would call a smart growth strategy. It's a way to accommodate to growth, and it's a good one. And we should be clustering houses in the rural area where we can, because the corollary of that is that it leaves more open space, and that's what we need environmentally. But I'm not sure that we have tough enough incentives to encourage developers to do that all the time.
Yeah. Margo, thank you for the call. We've got a line open at 977-1070. We're talking with Jack Marshall of ASAP, Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population. Jack, let me ask you this, because you talk about getting to a certain point with the number of people where the environment starts to degrade. Can't you always just either fix the environment or plant more trees? Or if you run out of water at this number, well, you can just spend a few $100 million of public money and build a new reservoir and build a new dam, and then you've got all the water that developers need for the next 50 years.
Well, that's the American way, isn't it? And there's a school of folks who look at population called, that we call the cornucopians, that there will always be, nature will always provide. And where, for example, we run out of an essential commodity, the technology will develop a new plastic or a new something. And we think that that's naive, and it doesn't show the recognition that there really are limits in our environment. And in fact, one of the objects of what we're trying to do is to show that we really have to make community decisions in the framework of ecological limits. There are environmental limits within which a community has to work. And America has always had a frontier. See, we're not like Europe. We've always been able to expand almost endlessly. And them days are gone. We've now got to start thinking in a qualitatively different way than we've been able to in the past. And that's why a lot of this stuff that to some of us seems pretty obvious is radical thinking to others. Because we're saying we can't live for the next 100 years the way we have the last 100.
Yeah. We're talking with Jack Marshall of ASAP, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. We'll take a very quick break. We'll be right back. We're talking with Jack Marshall of ASAP. He's president of Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population. And Jack, what's the website? I should have asked you before, but
it is ASAP Now, a little redundant. ASAP Now, one word, .org.
And this report is available on the website?
It is. And in fact, I hope people will look at it. And it's 76 pages or something, and a lot of it's turgid. But there are a lot of nice maps and a lot of nice graphs. And the first 2 pages of an executive summary are easy to read.
Yeah. Now, folks are going to be very quick to say, well, you're just anti-business. So if you're anti-business, you're anti-American. That this is, this is socialism. You're standing in the way of business, and business is growth. Business is people doing whatever they want to do.
Well, now, the couple of things you said. First, I'm not, nor is ASAP, but hostile to business. On the contrary, I want good restaurants. I want to buy good stuff. We believe that we don't have to constantly expand to have a healthy business climate. And I think European communities show that. I mean, Europeans ain't suffering. European communities, the size of ours, for example, I've lived there, and they're very healthy economically. And yet they don't feel the need to constantly expand. There's a whole kind of linked with the concept of a stationary population size is a steady state economy, which is a concept that's as new as the ASAP argument, but it's more and more bandied about. We've got to start thinking about economic systems that aren't premised on constant expansion.
What about the idea of the public money going into this study? The study wasn't entirely publicly funded, which was a myth, I think, but it did get some seed money from Albemarle County and from the city of Charlottesville to get y'all started. Does this set a precedent for any group now that wants to go to the local governments and get money for a study?
Well, it shouldn't set a precedent for any group, but boy, I hope that local governments continue to seek responsible organizations to do research that they can't afford to do, because I want my governments to make informed decisions. And of course, the national government does that all the time. The National Science Foundation, the National Institute of Health, there are 1,000 funding sources for research that provides information to the government to allow them to make better decisions. The government can't do it all. And so it turns outside itself with help. for that information. And that's just what happened here. And it was a good idea.
Yeah. Let me ask you about policy. What do you want to see that local governments do? Is this research, and does it ever get to the point where it becomes any type of policy in your mind?
We hope that this and the rest of the research will lead to more lively discussions about growth and help better define the vision for our community. And I'd like to see joint visioning by the city and the county. What is it we want to be like in not just 10 years, but 50 years, 100 years? Yes. Also, I think this research shows that while we can stem some of the environmental impacts of growth in the short term through smart growth tactics, they're simply not enough. And the authors, the scientists who did this, say that if we grow to build out, we're really environmentally in bad shape, that we've got to stop before that. So in addition to smart growth, we should probably, if we want a policy implication to this research, we should probably be starting this discussion about where we want to stop going.
Yeah. Now, I have to say, if just to pull back here, no pun intended, but to pull back and see the forest for the trees here, I think it's what we're seeing in you urging us to think beyond smart growth, that we're sort of seeing the next generation of planning, and that we're going to see a lot more of this around the country, because this is sort of the environmental angle on smart growth, that we don't just think about what do you want the community to look like. We think about, well, how many reservoirs do we want to be building in the future? Do we always want to be building a new dam and building a new reservoir so we can get more water? I sort of see this as, you know, as you see more and more people now, especially, you know, moderates like me, people in the middle who are starting to get a little bit more greener and thinking about capturing their rainwater and all these ideas that we thought were crazy years ago. Now you're starting to see it more and more because it makes business sense. I mean, a lot of businesses are adapting these policies, whether they're building a house or putting in, you know, no flush toilets or whatever, because it's fiscally responsible and it makes money sense.
Couldn't have said it better. Two things. First, let me stick to one. The ecosystem service research that we're focusing on here, most of the ecosystem service research looks at economic value of these services. What's it worth to a community to have its crops pollinated, to have its streams cleaned, and so forth? And they're tremendously expensive if we had to do it ourselves. And that gets into the business decisions. These forests have an economic value that we take for granted. And I hope that communities will start looking at the economic value of these services that we're rapidly degrading.
Tell me about you, for folks who want to learn more about this, they can look at the report online at asapnow.org. But you're also offering an Ollie course this fall where you explore all of these ideas. Fill us in on that.
I don't know if folks know about the Ollie program. It used to be Jill at the University of Virginia, and they have a wonderful range of courses. I'm going to be taking one myself on Secrets of the Blue Ridge, but I'm teaching a course called Managing Population Growth in Our Community, and it's 6 2-hour sessions. The second session, let me tell you, will involve the executive, Jay Willer, the executive director of Blue Ridge Home Builders.
Oh, yeah. And Jay's a good guy.
He is a good guy. And some others discussing this. So it's not going to be just the ASAP line. The object is to explore the causes, the consequences, the politics, the ethics, the choices regarding local growth. And the final class is to have the students themselves design a community population policy and a strategy for implementing it. And I'd be delighted to have some of your listeners take it.
Yeah. So this class then you can really discuss all of these ideas about that ASAP explores as an organization. You're going to explore these ideas in this class.
Yes. And it's not going to be. I'm not trying to sell the students on the idea. I want discussion, and it's very. I teach informally.
Right. Jack Marshall is the president of ASAP. And before we let you go, I'm curious now. This report is beginning a lot of press. A lot of people are talking about it. Is there any one big misconception out there that needs to be corrected, you think, that you're particularly bothered by?
Well, I haven't got enough negative feedback. I've got lots of positive feedback. You probably have heard more negative feedback than I have. I know there's been concern. We talked about the funding of it.
Yeah.
I think there may be misperceptions that ASAP wants to have a specific number of as the optimal size. And no, we don't know what that is yet. And it's going to be somewhere between 100,000 and 500,000. But we hope the research will help inform that decision.
Yeah. And it sounds like there would never really be one number, that it would be sort of a range.
Exactly. And it's going to change. You know, this year we may say we want X number, and, you know, our attitudes change, technology changes, for example, for cleaning water. So maybe in 10 years we say, we can handle more or fewer.
Yeah.
So it's not a magic forever number, but it is a number that is essential for planning, or a range, not a number. And without that sense of where we want to go, we think that the planning process in our community is blind.
I mean, if the public does not participate in the goal setting of growth and you just let it happen, then there's a small minority of people here who profit from growth who will determine it for you.
Exactly.
Whether you like it or not.
Exactly. And what we want an informed community. And ASAP, with the help of the Institute for Environmental Negotiations, is going to be going out into the community with the results of all our research projects in the coming months and asking, not telling them what they should conclude from all this, telling them what the research has found and asking them, the people, what the policy implications are. What should our governments learn from this?
Jack Marshall, president of Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population, online at asapnow.org. Jack, thanks for being here. I've enjoyed it.
It's a pleasure.
And thank you for the callers.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit sevillepodcast.com for more.